Thank you for tuning in. This is Grafton Reyes Doyle with Seven Lives Podcast. We'll explain the title in a little bit. But first, I'd like to introduce my guest today. His name is Julio Lopez Velasquez. He hails from Guatemala, but has lived here in Silicon Valley and Beverly Hills for how many years now, Julio?
It's going to be since I was 14, so it's like a 35 years.
See, there we go. So, Julio, everybody.
Hey, how you doing? I'm glad to be here, man. Thank you for interviewing me.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you. I was trying to decide who I should invite as far as my first podcast. I've never really done this thing before. Mm. And I tried to come up with a few names. And even when we were on our film set most recently, I was like, I wonder if I should try any actors and see if I can get a little celeb here. But I would say the biggest celebrity in my life is you.
Mm. Oh, wow. Thank you, man. That means a lot to me, coming from you too, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We know each other for a few years, you know what I mean? And now it's been
A decade.
A decade. I think a little bit more than a decade now.
Really?
Yeah, maybe 11 years now.
I met you when I was 23, I think.
Oh, yeah.
22, so 23. I'm 33 now.
Oh, yeah.
But don't tell anyone.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You're getting old, dude.
Yeah. So Julio and I met on an airplane going towards Hawaii.
Exactly.
Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And
Hawaii.
we were in this actor's retreat for the Meisner Technique Studio of Acting in San Francisco. And I remember when you first rolled up on that airplane, you had like 4 pieces of Louis Vuitton luggage. You like just freshly sprayed yourself with Gucci cologne and you were like off to just like, I mean, you looked like you were just like, you looked fabulous. And I was like, who is it? I was so intrigued. I was like, who is this guy? Mm-hmm. And we ended up actually sharing a room because that we were put together.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's one thing that I think this comes from my mom. When my mom was always dressed up. She always looked good. She had a beauty salon in Guatemala too.
Mm.
So it was always one thing that she always said was, you know, presentation, you know. And she said, you know, with the first impression, people are going to look at your shoes. People, you know, the way you speak, the way that you act, you know what I mean? You have to be really cordial to people. You have to be respectful. So many things that she told me when I was little, but my mom used to be the kind of woman that she will have to go to the market and she will dress up and look really, really, really good. And at that time, she was with my stepdad. We call him Don Luis. And he always wore suits, you know, beautiful shoes, suits and everything. He was always dressed up, you know what I mean? So I think it comes from that, because every time that he walked into a room, you know, or my mom walked into a room, it was just like a power couple, you know what I mean? So I think it came from somewhere there. Plus, you know, I love films too. You know, I used to get beat up when I was little by my mom. And it sounds kind of bad, beat up, but is it true? You know, watching black and white movies.
Would she actually beat you?
Oh, yeah. She will find me at 3 o'clock in the morning watching black and white. You know, I'm like a 7 years old or 8 years old. And watching movies, I'm like mesmerized by the movies. And she will like, what the hell are you doing? Oh, Peggy, you have to go to school tomorrow. And grab you by the hair and get a belt and stuff like that. But it never stopped me from watching the film. You know, ballet, everything that was artistic, you know, I was really drawn to it, you know, dancing and stuff like that. So I think all that dressed up, you know, and the cologne and stuff come from my mom's side, I think, and watching Don Luis for the few years that he was in my life.
Don Luis, he sounds like a dapper man.
Oh, yeah. He
Did he have a mustache?
Not really. He was a really educated person.
Uh-huh.
He's from Guatemala, but he came from, his family is kind of big in Guatemala. It's Luis Eduardo Asturias Hall.
Mm.
So that name is big over there. You know, they're kind of millionaires over there. Or used to be, I don't know yet at this point, you know. After he died, I never followed through that. But he was the kind of person who classy, you know. We will go to these special places called El Club Guatemala, you know, where you walk into a place, you know, all the waiters are wearing gloves and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
He graduated from in Miami as an architect. He went and specialized in a special, I know, like a Archibald Marks, because he lost an arm, in Germany. He was an architect, you know. He played basketball for the Guatemalan team too. You know, so he was a really, really, really cool dude.
And this is your stepdad.
Yeah, I call him my stepdad, but he's the one that I saw growing up, you know, when I was little, because he's the one who took over after my real dad left. But he loved us, but I always knew he wasn't my dad. You know what I mean?
And so, your real dad moved to San Jose, or was it California?
No, my dad, I was 5 months old, and for what I'm told, my mom, one day he told my mom, oh, I'm going to go to the United States, and I'm going to come and get you. And Don Luis facilitated with a friend to help him come to the United States. Mm. He came to Chicago. And then after that, he never came back. Never called, nothing. I met him later on when I was 13 years old, but from that point forward, you know, the father figure was never there anymore.
And so that's what brought you here, though, right?
Oh, yes.
your biological father.
Yes. When I was in Guatemala, you know, I remember skipping school one time, and my mom was parking right in the light. She saw me, she put me into military school. And basically, I think it was the second year of military school when he came down. I was 13 years old to Guatemala in a brand new Camaro. You know what I mean? He drove from the United States to Guatemala. He showed up over there, and I didn't want nothing to do with him, because I think I went through a lot of trauma growing up without a father. Because like a Father's Day at school, you know, they have like a place and events, and my mom will show up. And what happens after that, you know, I will get into big, after my mom left, everybody started making fun of me. So I will get into fights and stuff like that. And I never had that male figure, you know what I mean? Even though Luis was there, he was always too busy, you know? He has businesses, he has a bunch of different stuff. He gave us everything that he could, and he was a great person. And he was that figure that I would look up to, but he wasn't the one who will sit down with me and talk and play, you know. He was just there as a figure, you know what I mean?
So would you say that Don Luis's like image or presence in your life like influenced you to be an entrepreneur? Because I forgot to mention to our viewers or listeners that Julio is quite the entrepreneur extraordinaire. he is the owner and founder of Formosa Hot Sauce, Global Group Realty, and Tomorrowland Productions. Mm-hmm. Am I missing one other?
And Global Group Lenders.
And Global Group Lenders, which is separate from the realty company.
Exactly,
so that's a mortgage company, right?
Yeah, mortgage, yeah. We provide mortgages for residential and stuff like that.
Four businesses. I mean, that's quite exceptional. And would you say, where does that come from?
I think I'm going to be honest with you, it's come from Don Luis, maybe. Yeah. Seeing him, what happens, he had a billiards, you know, like a billiard where they play domino and stuff like that, huge thing in Guatemala. He had, he will build maybe 50, 70, 80 houses, you know, and he will sell them. So he has these projects of building. He had this life that he will take my mom in a yacht to Miami, you know what I mean? We will be in a yacht. We have chauffeurs and all kind of different stuff. You know, so I had that life, you know what I mean, where my mom, we're going to go to Mexico 70, you know, for the World Cup. And they will take off and go to, then they will end up in Louisiana, you know. And it was just amazing, the life that my mom was having with him, you know what I mean? But it's like a really, really, really cool life. But he drink a lot too. He used to drink a lot too. He used to be the kind of guy that he will party like crazy, and he will drink for 2-3 weeks, and then a doctor will come to the house. He had that kind of money. The doctor will come with the black, luggage, give him an IV.
That was my grandfather.
Oh, yeah?
Not literally, mm-hmm. But that was what my grandfather did. He made a lot of house visits.
Oh, wow.
And this is like the 1960s, I guess.
Yeah, in 1970s, yeah. And it was just funny to see that he will come, they will give him an IV, and he will be in bed for 2 days, you know what I mean? I will come up and like, hey, Don Luis, do you want anything? And he'll be like, yeah, give me a glass of water. Oh, yeah, can you give me a massage in my legs? And he will like, oh, here you go. He will give us always money when we would do stuff like that. He was really, really cool. But the alcoholism was there. You know what I mean? But it was the kind of, it was seamless because he was always doing well. You know what I mean? Always, he was always doing well, always money and everything. And he was, but he was really brilliant, and he was really educated, really respectful to people. His drivers and his chauffeurs, he built them houses for them.
Oh my gosh!
So they will have a house for them. So he really took care of people. He was really, really, you know, when the earthquake in 1976 happens, when the whole Guatemala City fell down, it was like a, I think 8-point-something in the scale of the earthquake, and everything fell down. He was buying food and giving food to people, beans, water. He was delivering all that. He was really helping, you know what I mean? So his qualities were really amazing, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. And I think he always gave us good examples, but never the closeness of sitting down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the only thing. But he was, yes, he was an amazing person, you know, until he cheated with my mom find out.
Oh, Don Luis.
Don Luis, yeah, no, he was a womanizer. I'm not going to...
I mean, with a name like that, and outfits it sounds like, and the doctor visits, and all the houses for chauffeurs, it sounds like Don Luis had... There has to be a flaw.
Oh, yeah, no, and the flaw was, you know, he loved women. And he was always, you know, I'm the kind of guy who used to go under the table.
Yeah.
We used to have this big table, like for 14 people.
Yeah.
And when all of his friends used to come to the house, they're drinking, they're eating, and everybody's laughing. He had a really great friends. I used to go underneath that. Yeah, I used to be in between the chairs listening. All the conversation, they laugh and everything. And he was a charmer. I mean, like, he was a freaking charmer. And my mom was with him, and all of a sudden, you know, he had a secretary, the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, my mom found out, you know what I mean? And my mom was like, I don't want to be with you anymore. But this time, they already had a kid together, my sister. And my mom, oh, no, I'm leaving. So, you know, we went from chauffeurs, from trips, from jets, from everything.
Oh my gosh.
Into living in a little apartment, and my mom had a house that she sold it to, and there were times that we ate tortillas and salt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I had the great opportunity to see all this, but at the same time we went completely down. You know what I mean? And at that time, it's when my mom caught me skipping school. And they were in the process of separating. And she goes, you're going to military school, you know what I mean? It was really rough for me because there was always a relationship issue between my mom and my brother and I. She was always, you know, I don't know, he will do something wrong. It's fine. Julio does something. My mom grew up getting beat up. You know what I mean? That's how she grew up. And that's how it's in our country in all time, you know. You do something wrong, they beat you up. You know what I mean? It's not about beating, you know, they grab a belt, they grab whatever. So I don't fault her for that. What happened, that's the way that she learned, you know what I mean? But it was really tough, you know what I mean? But I had this problem with myself too, that I will be always stand up to her. And she will beat me more, and I will look more. But, you know, it was one of those things where I had something to say always, you know what I mean? Even if I was little too, you know what I mean? But when I went to military school, I think that's the best thing that can happen to me, because discipline.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the discipline came in. Where when it comes to, we get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, we run for 2 hours, everything has to be completely. So that part of the discipline of the military school is the thing that helped me the most.
Well, that's something I've actually known about you for a while now, is that discipline. I mean, it's like so ingrained in your spirit. And not only that, like, I want to comment just a little bit on the fact that ever since I've known you, your generosity of spirit has just been like one of the greatest parts of your character. And it's the one thing that people comment the most when they meet you, is they say how genuine and kind you are. And I think that's it's interesting to hear about this Don Luis guy, because actually, I don't think I've ever really... I think you mentioned him, but never in this capacity. And so I actually think, like, it's interesting, because it's like, I'm like, oh, that sounds like you, Julio, except for the womanizing part. Because I've never, like, you're like very respectful.
Well, I got my times, but when I was single, but not now.
But now, yeah, exactly. So, and that's interesting, but like the discipline aspect of like the fact, so we just got back, Julio and I, and my husband, John, and Julio's son, Giuliano, we just got back from New York City, and where we spent 18 days?
18 days, yeah.
18 days producing our upcoming project. I don't know if we can mention the name.
I think we can right
now.
On Our Way.
It's called On Our Way.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lovely group of actors, and and directed and written and directed by Sophie Lane Curtis. And I will say that every day, you know, I mean, how many hours of sleep did we get?
Some days were three, sometimes were four. And I think only on our day off one time, we had like a six or seven, I think. But that was the only one day.
That was one day. Yeah. So it's just like, and I would say that's the discipline. It's because, like, I mean, to run four businesses, I mean, that are very successful. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, be shooting for 3 weeks in New York City during COVID, like, I mean, like, all of these factors, it's like you still, like, woke up every morning like before everyone else. You always, like, you always had you, like, you're ready to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just like, it was a, I mean, to me, it's just like, that's, that speaks to the work ethic, you know.
Yeah, what happens, you know, when you come from a third world country and all of a sudden you find yourself in the United States, you know, washing dishes, cleaning dirty bathrooms. But at the same time, you had the experience of living a few years of your life with a good life, you know what I mean? Chauffeurs and yachts and all the different stuff. And then you go with nothing again. And when it gets to a point that you understood what I wanted to do. I love acting. I love ballet. I love jazz. I love theater. I love film, you know. But I always wanted to, one of my main points was always, I need to have multiple sources of income too. And at that time, I didn't know how I was going to do it because I'm washing dishes and, you know, when you clean those smelly, dirty bathrooms and all this stuff splash back at you, and all of a sudden you have to walk 7 miles because you don't know how to take the bus in winter. And then we really suffer a lot with my brother, Herman, my cousin, Vinny, and my other cousin, Luis, and
your
myself.
Cousin Vinny?
Yeah, Vinny, yeah. that sounds like a movie, right?
It is a movie.
It's a movie. And we suffer a lot, you know. We went through not speaking English and eating AM, PM, mini market hamburgers for almost 8 months on our days off. Because we didn't know.
That was when you moved here.
When I moved here, yeah.
And you were working in a kitchen, you were dishwashing mostly.
What happened, this is the story. The restaurant will turn into a disco or a nightclub at 10 o'clock. Uh-huh. So I will come in, you will wash all these dishes from the restaurant, dinner goes on, lunch goes on, and then at 10 o'clock, everything turns into a nightclub, you know. It used to be called Eli McFly in Cupertino.
Yeah.
And it's a huge, beautiful place, space and stuff like that. So what happens at 2 o'clock, you know, it closes 1:30, 2 o'clock, last call. And there you go. You have to go and pick up everything, wash all the dishes. And then they give you a big hose to clean up the bathroom. Imagine those bathrooms after people drink all night, party all night. What is in the walls? What is
Oh my God.
And they will give
any phone numbers?
Huh? I bet you there were a lot, but at that time I didn't speak English to even think about that at all, you know. But the thing about it was they will grab that hose like if you were a fireman.
Yeah.
And you will hose the walls, everything. And that thing, it will splash back at you. And I remember one time, you know, when I was coming back. And at that time, my dad already came back to Guatemala. He was showing off his Camaro. And while he was there, he gets into an accident. And in Guatemala, it's completely different. You know, he went into a store. Imagine a store, and the car went inside. He was drunk.
Oh,
so he ended up in jail in Guatemala.
Shit.
And they don't want to release him because they know that he's an American. Now he became a citizen too, and he's in jail. So through all this time, you know what I mean? We tried to help him out. Finally, my mom, she had all kinds of connections. They sneak him out of the country, and he comes back over here. And then he's, oh, come over. You know, you're going to go to school. You're going to do all these different things. And when we come, it wasn't nothing like that. Next day, he's like, okay, you're going to work tomorrow. And I'm like, I thought I was going to school. And he goes, no, you're going to work. So next day,
So wait, he invites you to come go to school, cool. And he'll take care of everything and, like, start you out on your life in America.
Exactly.
And the next day he puts you to work, and it's like at some nightclub slash restaurant.
Exactly. Yeah. He's like, well, you're going to work. I'm like, what about school? He's like, no, you're going to work.
Yeah.
So what happens, you know, I put my best clothes. I go over there and they go, here's your host, Julio.
Wow.
Here's the dishes. And I remember really vivid, you know, the part of how I learned what hat means, you know what I mean? And one of the cooks comes with this stack of pans. They just cook some pasta or something like that. And he goes, careful, it's hat. In Guatemala, when they tell you hat, it's a hat, you know, like a cap or something like that. And I look at his hat and like, okay, I grab the pans and I burn the hell out of my hands. I mean, like, I even skin peel off.
Oh.
And that moment is when I go like, okay, I know what hat means.
That's the perfect way to learn another language, exactly. I guess, is through pain.
Yeah, and my dad, what happens at that time, he was, you know, we make peace with him after before he died and stuff like that. But at that time, he was just looking for to bring people over here and for them to pay his bills and pay money. So, you know, if the PG&E was $40, everybody got charged $40, not only one person, you know what I mean? So,
you mean he would charge each individual $40 and he would keep the money?
Exactly. We were like, he was looking at us more as a, you know, somebody.
Yeah, he took advantage of you guys.
And we got really lucky. This lady who was renting the house to him, she go like, I have another house. My dad and mom used to live there. And they used to be hoarders. If you guys come and clean it up, I'm just going to charge you half of the rent. And there we were, like a month and a half later after we came to the United States, 14 years old, 15 year old, 16 years old, and 17 year old, we're living on our own.
And so when did you, what got you out of the restaurant business? And like, how did you get started on this path of entrepreneurship?
Well, I always loved, you know, what happened while I was working in the restaurant, doing this dishwasher, I started working as a busboy some days, and then I started working as a prep cook.
Yeah.
So when I started working at Prep Coop, that thing took me out of the dishwasher, you know what I mean? So I felt like, oh, I'm in the kitchen now. And there was I tried to go to high school for maybe like about 6 months, but I will get to work at 6 o'clock in the morning and I won't get home until 4 or 5. And then I have to be up at 7 o'clock to go. And I think I kept that up maybe for about 3 to 4 months only. Yeah. I couldn't handle it. And, you know, and I decided not to, you know, I go like, I gotta work. So
you gotta survive. Yeah. You're taking care of yourself. You're
exactly.
The only one.
So I went to the ANSA college and I enrolled. They asked me, how old are you? And I lied about my age, of course, that I was 18. And I started taking acting classes, ballet classes, jazz classes, and theater classes too.
Wow.
And I couldn't understand crap of what they were saying, but I was there in the class.
But you're like, they're nodding along and just like doing the best you can.
Yeah, and I was that guy in the ballet class all the way in the back, you know what I mean? Always learning, they calling Julio, no. It was super cool. It was one of those, I did theater too, hardly speaking English, you know, I just would learn my lines, I did modeling too, I did a bunch of different stuff. But at that time, I became the saute cook. Then I became the grill cook. Then I became the sous chef, and then I became the chef of the restaurant, and it was amazing, you know what I mean? Then I run another restaurant at California. I work at California Cafe too as a sous chef. I run another restaurant called Saps as a chef too, and it got to a point where you know what I mean? I remember going in a date, and I went home and I took 3 showers because, you know, when you're a chef, you work from 6 o'clock in the morning all the way until 6 at night. And when somebody doesn't show up, sometimes you have to cover or you have something else to do or you have parties or whatever. And I remember taking 3 showers and I smell like food still. And I went on this date and I was so uncomfortable because the smell of food, I can feel it coming out of my body. And I was like, I don't want to cook anymore. You know, I love cooking. Don't take me wrong. One of my passions is cooking. But that's when I made the decision. I'm like, no. That's enough. So I remember a friend of mine got me a job in, Beanie, my cousin, he introduced me to this temp agency. And I started working for Apple Computer, shipping and receiving.
Okay.
Then at the same time, you know, then I was working as a busboy somewhere else. And then, you know, I had like a 4 different jobs just to make, start sending money to my mom, you know, because you're supposed to support them.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know, little by little, you know what I mean? I started doing the modeling. I was doing everything, was working out and stuff like that. But then it became, you know, when I met my father's family when I was 13 and I met my cousins, that's when I started drinking. You know, that's because I didn't drink.
And how old were you then?
13.
13, we started drinking.
Yeah, so it was a different thing, you know what I mean? We get drunk and stuff like that, you know, but that's the side of the family. We start drinking, and that's when I start drinking a lot, but I start drinking 13. But I didn't see the progression that what I was drinking because I had a lot of demons, you know what I mean? Not having a dad.
Yeah.
You know, when I was little, I suffered a lot, you know what I mean? I used to pee in bed until I was like 8 years old or something like that. I was really scared. I had really bad nightmares. It's a lot of stuff that was going on with me. And when I came over here, you know, it got to a point that I went like, I don't know where I am. From. Am I from Guatemala? Am I from United States? You get to a point where you don't know where you fit anymore.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you keep on working, you keep on doing what you're supposed to do and stuff like that, and you're happy. But the only way that you can feel like is sometimes drinking. You know what I mean? That was my best friend at that time.
And what was your drink?
Oh, I remember, you know, in Guatemala we used to Oh my God, we used to buy a bottle of, it's called India, it's pure alcohol.
Yeah.
And you buy a liter of beer. So you grab the India, big shot, you can even feel it coming out of your nose, and then you drink the beer just to pour it down. Over here, it was more about beer.
Yeah.
At the beginning, I was drinking beer, wine, and stuff like that. Then it progressed into you know, harder alcohols like vodka and stuff like that.
But you were like 56 beers a day, right?
Oh, that was towards the end.
That was towards the end. Okay. So just so our listeners know, we get to 56 beers a day.
Okay. Yeah. You see, people were like, "What? Nobody can drink that." Yes, I could. So what happens? You know, I start going out partying. I start using my another cousin's ID to go out.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I meet my ex-girlfriend, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or my ex-wife. And I go out with her for 3 months. We break up. And all of a sudden, you know what I mean? I come to find out that she was already 2 months pregnant.
Oh, fuck.
So I'm 18. She's 25. Because I lied to get into the club. She thought, I was 21 or 22, something like that. So she was 5 years older
than
me.
Wow.
And she had a son already. So all of a sudden, I come and find out this through the pregnancy. I was there all the time. And, you know, but when my kid was born, I go to myself, I can do the same thing that my dad did. So I have to
take care of your family.
All the dreams, everything had to stop. I get 3 jobs. You know, I done everything from construction, from driver, from cook, from shipping and receiving. I remember downtown Mountain View. I was the gardener. We will clean the library in downtown Mountain View too. You know, I did every single job that you can believe, but I always have to have 2 or 3 jobs to be able to support.
Jesus.
You know what I mean? So
it's, what did that feel like? I mean, like having like being 18 years old and mm-hmm. having all these dreams. All these passions mm-hmm. for like to tell stories or to. You know, be an actor or a dancer, but how did that feel when you had to like actually like come to the that
realization? I think that's one of the I cannot put it in words, but I feel like the sky was falling on me.
Yeah.
I feel like everything went out the door completely. I felt like I don't know, it was, you know, because I always been really artistic, it was like somebody just ripped a part of me completely. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I knew that I couldn't do that to my son because I knew how I felt, not having a dad. I knew how many fights I got into because people would make fun of me. In Guatemala, it's really like when you don't have a father, you're a bastard, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I remember asking Don Luis too when I was little, like, "Hey, can I call you dad?" He goes, "No, I'm not your dad."
And he told you that?
Yeah, but
literally, he said, "I'm not your dad."
Exactly.
Don't
I go like,
dad.
"Can I call you dad?" He goes, "No, I'm
how
not your
old
dad."
Are you?
Oh my God, I was 7 years old.
Can you imagine like 7-year-olds ask? So I have 2 stepchildren, and I can't imagine mm-hmm. if one of them asked me, because they're 7 and 9, one of them, or 8 and 9 now. But I can't imagine when the little one asked me, if she asked me, like, "Can I call you dad?" Mm-hmm. I don't know how I could not respond with yes, of course. Like,
exactly.
I love you. But like, so that's that. How did that feel as a 7-year-old to be rejected by a man who you admired?
Imagine, you know, right now I can still talk about it because it really impacted my life growing up. Right now, I understand why he did it.
Mm.
Why? Because he knew that he wasn't my dad, but on top of that, he knew that he wasn't going to be there long.
Got it.
He already knew. So
he was saving me the hurt.
Because now that I see Don Luis, his pattern, you know what I mean? He not only he was a womanizer and he used to drink a lot, he got to a point that he stopped drinking and he changed. But at the same time, you know what I mean? I think he wanted to have that life where he wanted to do whatever he want because he has so many dreams and to grow.
Yeah.
And when you have a woman that is really jealous or a woman who wanted to be always checking on you, that's my mom for you. Then what happens, you know what I mean? You just feel trapped. And I understand that now, you know what I mean? So I kind of think he knew he wasn't going to be there long. You know what I mean? So when my kid was born, I look at my kid and I'm like, "No, I can do this." So I told her to come and live with me. So I became a dad, a stepdad, and a husband. You know
all
what I mean?
All in one fell swoop. After 3 months of dating someone.
Yeah, and the thing that we broke up.
She's like, "I'm pregnant."
No, she didn't say it. Somebody else came and told me. And
she didn't tell you at first.
No, she was so too proud. She goes, "I'm going to do it on my own," and stuff like that.
Wow.
So when I came in, she called like, "Julia, I wanted to let you know that she's pregnant 2.5 months. And I knew it was mine because I didn't use any protection. And she's not the kind of woman that will go and sleep around. And it was funny because to me, it was like, but at the same time, now I know that Juliano and Angel were my blessings. because what happens, I never felt a love in my life like I like what you feel for your son. You know what I mean?
Wow.
It's a love that you can understand. You can be married. It can be your mom. It can be your dad. But your son is like a part of you, and you become this lion. You know what I mean? That you have to protect him. But at the same time, the relationship wasn't there. She's an amazing woman, but when it came to dreams, mine were like reaching the sky. For her, was just about
having a family, or just having a stable life.
It's not only, but she wanted the life of traveling and spending and all the different stuff and the good things. Mm-hmm. But who had to work for that? Me. You know what I mean? So it became, you know, a relationship where maybe we. I think we love each other for a little while, but it was more, you know, we knew we had to stay together because of Giuliano, because of what was going on. But I was so miserable when it came to all my dreams are on the side. You know, everything is on the side. I cannot do anything that I love to do anymore. I cannot act. I cannot do anything. So to me, it was so frustrating not being able to do anything that I started drinking more and more and more. But at the same time, I started doing real estate. You know what I mean? I used to work for GT MobileNet, that is Verizon now. And I was a senior account executive. I was doing great sales and everything. I worked for Nextel Communications. I broke all the records. But there you go. The more money I was making, the more I was drinking. The more money I was making, the more traveling. Traveling to one thing that I don't regret the drinking. I don't regret everything that I went through because I travel so much, I spend money like crazy, but I have fun. I was in the most expensive place in Europe, in Mexico, and whatever. But it was hitting my ego too, because I was drinking at the same time.
How did the drinking affect your relationship with your son?
You know something? When he was little, I don't think it affected him until he started going to high school. I think it affected us at that time. He was always with me. I will take him to the games. We will do everything together. Giuliano was always with me, even when he was little. If we get into a fight with my ex-wife, he will go with me. We stay in a hotel, you know what I mean? So he was like my partner at that time, you know? And we were like there were like two families in that house. There was Juana and Angel, and there was Julio and Giuliano, you know? We were like a two different...
Well, that's how I felt when I first met you guys. Mm-hmm. I felt like you were two peas in a pod. I mean, like, you guys were inseparable. And I remember, like, just when you spoke of Giuliano, you were just, there's all that love and warmth mm-hmm. you just exuded from you. Mm-hmm. And you did, I mean, like, Giuliano's an incredible guy. Like, he's one of my favorite guys in this whole world. And he's such a special kid.
No, he is amazing writer, amazing. And even he doesn't want to talk about it, but he's an amazing actor too. I saw him doing theater, maybe like I remember his first show in theater in high school. He was amazing, you know, he was the lead and everything. But I think, you know, there were a lot of, I think I was there for him all the time when he started getting older. And I remember we moved from Sunnyvale into San Jose. I bought my first house. And we had to pull him out of high school over here. He was so upset. Oh. And finally, he met new friends over here, and everything was going great. And I facilitated, hey, you want to go out with your friends? You know, I was the dad who will facilitate, and we always got along. But I think there was a point when I started drinking too much, where, you know, I will say I will do something, and I will do it, but, maybe stumbling, but I will get it done, you know what I mean? Or sometimes, you know what I mean, I will be too drunk to do stuff. But you know, a lot of people didn't know that I was drinking. It was really weird because towards the end, I was, oh my God, I almost died like four times. You know, yeah. I got into an accident. I was in a coma. They put a tube in my arm because my pancreas was filled up. I couldn't eat for 3 months. I went from 198 to 120 pounds. I almost died. It was all for the grace of God. You know what I mean? That I'm alive because I drink one time, I think like 3 bottles of vodka one time, and I end up in the hospital. So it was a recurring thing for me to be in the hospital, but at the same time was a recurring thing that I was always producing and making money. So
that's such a duality. I mean, like mm-hmm. that is such, I mean, like to be like the most like powerful person, like mm-hmm. as far as like in your life, as far as like producing so much and mm-hmm. protecting your family in that way, but then also like killing yourself at the same time. How did you get sober?
You know, it happens. It's really funny because I wanted to get sober, but I thought as alcohol as my best friend because I was so miserable that I wasn't doing what I love. But I couldn't understand it at that time. At that time, it was all her fault. And for her, I was his default. And everything became so materialistic for a little while that I was blinded by you know, oh, I'm making money, leave me alone. You know what I mean? All kind of different stuff. Yeah. But at the same time, I go back and I ask myself, how you didn't die? The reason I didn't die is because I think I learned that from Don Luis. Maybe, you know, I always help people. Even if I was drinking, I always did a bunch of different stuff. You know what I mean? That I go back and I go like, that's why God had mercy on me, because I always been a good person, always helping. Even if I'm drinking, you know, and we will close big deals of real estate and mortgages, and I never mess up once. And I always help people. So I think that's one of the things that why I still here. But I remember towards the end, I will get up in the morning, like about 4 o'clock in the morning, I will have a six pack. I will go back to sleep. At 6 o'clock, I will have another six pack. Then around 8 o'clock, I will get up, take a shower. And before I leave, I will drink maybe like a 3 or 4 or 5 beers again. Mm. After that, I will drive to 7-Eleven and buy maybe like two 12 packs or 2 24s. And I will put it in my trunk. I will get to the office. And basically, we have a processors and everybody. I will go into my office, close the door, drink a little bit more, try to close deal, eating mints like crazy, you know what I mean? Talking to customers and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, lunch times, drinking again. Then 5 o'clock, happy hour, drinking again. And then on my way, and I will go into the car and grab some and put in my breeze pay and drink more. And then going home, I will buy another 12 or 24 and drink. All the way until maybe 12 midnight or maybe 11 or whenever I pass out.
Yeah.
And I remember one day I forgot to buy beer. that's when the reality came in, how many beers, because what I used to do, I used to grab all the beers that I have in my car or in the house that I will drink, and I will put them all in one corner in order for me to and that way nobody will know that I was drinking. I didn't want anybody in the house to know that I was drinking that much.
Yeah.
And then I remember running out and going there and trying to find if any of those were full, you know what I mean? Because I was almost dying. I had 6 months already drinking every single day. And I'm shaking. And basically, you know, I remember going through all single, and all of a sudden I start counting. And I have maybe like about 48 beers over there. And then I count what I drink every day at lunch times. Then I count what I drink in happy hours too. And add up to 56 beers, you know what I mean? So I was like, oh my God. So I'm shaking like crazy. I go into my room and I try to, I'm like, I didn't know what to do because it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Nobody's opening to sell you alcohol. There's no more alcohol. And I feel like literally I'm dying. And I go into the closet and I trying to hit the wall and I hit a jacket. And the jacket had 2 beers inside.
Oh my God.
They were Modelo can beers. I can remember it. And I drink one really quickly. I went on my knees and I remember going like, God, I don't want to drink anymore. And then I drink the other beer. By this time, it's already like a 5-something, you know what I mean? And at 6 o'clock, I go and buy more beer. And I get a call and my sister-in-law, she goes like, hey, Julio, can you find out about this place? I know it's really expensive, but I want to take my son over there. My nephew has an addiction problem too.
But she like a rehab?
Rehab.
Oh, he wanted your sister-in-law call for someone else.
She wanted me to call because she didn't speak English that well to find out if they do it by payments.
And this is like right after you had this kind of moment.
And the moment that I went to my knees and I told God I don't want to drink anymore. And I Holy knew that the God used her to give me that information because I call in. They go, no, we don't. And I just went, you know.
What about me? Did you ask what about me?
Oh, yeah. Can I come in? How much does it cost to get in? And they were like, depending if you want to be in the back or you want to be in the front. It's Spencer Recovery Center in Laguna Beach.
Yeah.
Amazing. So
what was the name of it? Do you remember?
Spencer's. Recovery Center.
Spencer's.
Yeah. So I say, yes, I need to go in. I don't want to drink anymore and stuff like that. Also, is this for you? No, it was for my nephew.
They always think that too. Because I remember, so I've been to like, I think 6 rehabs.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. 6 rehabs, 2 jails, and like 1 fucking institution or 1 wilderness camp. Mm-hmm. Like, that'll just paint a picture for you. All from the ages of 16 to 21. Everybody. Mm-hmm. So, But I remember everyone that I remember ever being at those rehabs, I remember being like, so many people like you were like, said, oh, they acted like they were calling for someone else, but then the phone person was like, who is this really for?
Exactly.
And so it's funny because it's like, you technically were
calling
for someone else, but, and so these people on the other line are like, well, this motherfucker is trying to call for himself.
Exactly. And that is actually like a, are you sure you're not calling for yourself? And I'm like, well, let me get to a point. I just want to ask you the other question for somebody else. And then they go like, it's going to be like about $28,000. And if you're going to go in front, it's going to be like 40 something thousand.
God.
But at that time I had the money.
Yeah, we were,
you know,
working.
So I just went like, you know, something. Yeah, I need to go in. I called my sister-in-law and I told her, no, they don't do payments. You know what I mean? She, okay, I'll find somewhere else. That night, a car picked me up to the airport. I'm trying to get drunk in the airport before I go over there. Everything was closed. I don't know why, but I had a few beers. Got into the plane. I start going into panicking when I get there. Yeah. Another car picked me up. They take me up. And I just, the last thing I remember, they're asking me questions and they go like, we have to give him Lubrium. Is that a drug?
Valium.
No. Lubrium.
Lubrium.
Oh. Yeah, it's something that makes your body think that you're drinking.
Got it.
But it's not. And
yeah,
they
have to, because you could die.
Yeah.
From, I start shaking.
They gave me that. They put an IV and I don't remember anything for a week. I mean, nothing. They said that I will get up in the middle of the night sweating, going to the bathroom, coming back here. The nurse will come in and check my vitals. So it was
that's
awful.
That's the detox.
That's the detox. It was awful. I mean, yeah. Like, but then finally I get up and that happens. It was 2006. It was March 2nd, 2006. That's my birthday.
Oh my God.
And
you were born again.
Yeah. And my birthday is March 24th. So it was the same month. So it was amazing because since that day, I remember waking up again and going to therapy too. You know, you have to deal with all this stuff. Asking my mom, why did she, you know, it was all this cleaning of your life. And, you know, I never drink again. You know, I've been sober for 14 years and 6 months now. And
wow.
But I was born again. And I remember
I remember I met you when you were like, you had... How many years? You were like, I mean, that was like 6 years maybe, or was it?
I think it was 2006. We met like in 2011,
Or you had 5 years.
Five.
I remember it was like, and you were still like, you were back on track with your life, but you were still building all these new businesses before you had a lot of.
Oh, no, exactly. No, I remember. Yes, getting over there, and my we tried to have a meeting with my ex-wife at that time. She didn't want to come, and counselor in therapy said, you know, if you go back home, you're gonna drink again.
Yeah, because your relation, because the family's used to you in a certain way.
Exactly.
And so that I remember that being like, I had so many programs tell me like, or like my counselors or therapists would say, you have to go to a sober living, or you have to be in a new environment because your family's gonna just basically make you drink, even though they're not intending it. It's just they're so used to you a certain way.
They know what buttons to push when they're pissed off. They know what buttons not to push. They know how to do say certain things. They you know, and they say, you gonna drink again if you go back.
And if you're healing from this mental illness, like often the family has to heal in their own way because they have their part to play.
Mm-hmm.
And that is often overlooked, especially in most families, because when you see the person with the main issue, it's you can blame them more easily instead of taking responsibility for yourself.
Exactly.
And that is something that I think a lot of families go through, and that's why so many families end up breaking up.
Exactly.
Because like one person won't change, even if the alcoholic does change.
Exactly. And that's one thing that I noticed, because when she was supposed to come to talk and see how we're going to work this out, she didn't show up. So that means, you know what I mean, she didn't feel that she has any fault at all, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And at the same time, I noticed the damage that I was doing to Juliana, that I did to Juliana too, you know, by, you know, embarrassing him when I was too drunk, doing a bunch of different stuff that I did, you know what I mean? Or calling him, you know, you have to put your balls in place or whatever, you know what I mean? Or telling him stuff, you know what I mean, that after in therapy we went together and I go, no, I didn't mean it like that, I mean it like this. Oh, I thought you mean it like that, but... All this year, he thought that I meant it in another way.
Shit.
So what happens?
Well, we say and do things that when we're drunk
high
that we like obviously regret or wish that we did differently.
Exactly.
And that's like a big part of that process is the amends.
Exactly. You have to do a lot of amends. And that's what I try to do, you know. But at the end, you have to have that therapy with your son. You have to go and just talk about it.
What was that like?
Oh, it was, you know, it was really cool because a lot of stuff that he thought that I meant, I didn't mean it that way. And he understood then, but there's a lot of stuff that I said that I really hurt him.
But
there were stuff that he said to me too that really hurt me too.
What was that road of forgiveness like? Was it easy? Like, was it easy for him just to say, "I forgive you, Dad, I'm glad," just as long as you're sober, or did it take more time?
Oh no, at that time, I think we didn't have the therapy with Julian until almost maybe like about 2 years ago, or 3 years ago.
Oh shit.
Yeah, but we tried to amend a lot of things, but there were. What happened after that, when I came back, I got out of rehab. I don't know how this happened, but I bought a house that I was going to flip. And I was trying to sell it, and I couldn't sell it. And when I got out of rehab, I still have the house. And I was like, okay, that's my new house. That's what I'm going. So I never went back home. I took directly from rehab into that house.
Is this Porpoise Bay?
Porpoise Bay, yeah.
You've been there since?
Yeah, exactly.
I love that little place. Exactly. I love it. It's like such a great house.
Exactly. It's like and I love it, you know what I mean? And I sat at the end of the bed, of my bed. That's when I asked, you know, okay, Julio, what do you want to do when you were a kid? I wanted to act. I wanted to make films. I wanted to have my own product. So all these dreams that start coming up. And that's the start of going back to acting school and doing all this stuff. At that time, Juliano is going to college already. You know, he went to England too and stuff like that. So we have a good relationship. But I think a lot of the what happens, the stuff that came up was when he started working together. You know, he started helping me with real estate. He started helping me with Formosa too and stuff like that. And there was expectations that I think I wasn't meeting, you know what I mean? Because I'm so used to talking to him one way or the other one. And there were a little bit, some resentment and no resentments or whatever. And finally, he had to go on his own and try life. But I tried to do the best, you know, but I was just doing the best that I could with what I had, you know, mostly coming from my mom and everything. I'm not saying, you know, oh, it's not my fault. I'm just saying, you know, it's amazing how you are, your parents, you know, beat you up. And I go, I'm never going to beat my son. Well, I don't know. But he got spanked. I'm not going to lie to you. You know what I mean?
I got spanked.
Yeah. And you know, but it gets to a point, you know what I mean, that I go like, oh my God, you know, so. You have to ask for forgiveness, you know what I mean? But that therapy, when we sit down and finally we talk everything, I can see there were a lot of resentments about it, you know what I mean?
But there's also only so much you can do. I mean, that, especially when you're an adult and your child grows up. I mean, the thing is, I remember my dad always said, you know, he's like, well, once you're past 21, it's up to you. Mm-hmm. Like, basically saying, like, don't come to me for anything because I've done what I could do. Like, you're 21, you're an adult now. Mm-hmm. Figure it out. Like, if you need to go to therapy, figure it out. If you need to, like, solve it, if you have a resentment or a problem, that's not my issue.
And that was
a problem for me because, like, I love my parents. I probably had, like, some of the greatest parents ever, like, God could ever have given me. And, like, I still, like, hold these resentments because they, like, took actions when I was, like, in my, you know, rebellious stage that I, like, that led me down these other dark paths and, like, but they didn't intend it. And I, like, would sometimes hold it over their head in my, like, when I was, like, even, like, sometimes I have these thoughts where I'm, like, well, how can I blame them still? And it's, like, I have to take responsibility for my life. It's, like, in the end of the day, like, I'm the common denominator in this relationship and like in all these string of circumstances.
Exactly. Huh?
Like, it's not just my parents, you know, and I think that's, like, the one blessing I, like, of the many that I love about, like, getting sober is, like, or just growing up. But for me, that's the kind of, they kind of go hand in hand, because the moment I drink or the moment I use, I lose all of that. Like, any maturity that I had is gone.
It's gone.
Like, I am become this infant child again that is, like, the king baby they talk about that, like, needs to, like, just satisfy its own thirst for, like, whatever.
Exactly.
And
it's nobody's fault, but it's not your fault. It's everybody else's fault.
it's everybody else's fault. It is. And it's, like, so easy. And I notice when I'm in relapse mode, because I... Unlike you, who stayed sober for 14 years, I've had my fair share of relapses, and I it's always at that 3-year, 4-year mark.
Exactly, because you start getting cocky.
Because I get cocky, and I start, like, and I notice when it starts happening, because I've, like, done a lot of work on this. I can tell you, it's when I start blaming other people.
Exactly.
And when I start doing that, that's, like, a sign that I'm on the path towards relapse. And so, like. Knowing that now, because I've fallen a couple times, I think 3 times, I'm able to now address that immediately. And like, it's like, okay, gotta steer the ship right. Mm-hmm. Gotta like meditate, gotta pray. I got to, you know, go to meetings.
Being grateful, being humble.
Yeah, I got to call my sponsor. I got to call Julio.
Yeah, I know.
Like, because there was a period in my life when I was, because after we were friends for several years, first of all, we met and I was drinking. So I got sober when I was 21. Mm. I was a big tweaker, hustler, you know, read Dope Queens, see Dope Queens when
exactly.
it comes out.
There what, you go.
Like, you'll, that's basically my life at 21. I just get out of jail. I decide, my parents send a lawyer, says, okay, you need to go to a treatment center or you're going to go to stay in jail longer. Mm-hmm. And so I went to a treatment center. Now, I did 40 days in jail. Mm-hmm. And the night that I got to jail, I picked the Bible off the library shelf and I opened it, the Bible, to a random page because my grandmother would play this game with me when I was a kid called God's Pick.
Oh, wow.
And so I like flipped the page to God's Pick. Mm-hmm. And what did God want me to read? So I randomly picked a selected a page, and it was Jesus telling the story of the prodigal son.
Oh, wow.
Well, what did I do? I just wept. I like cried.
Exactly.
Profusely for like hours. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, because I was like, that was my life. Like I was the son that squandered everything.
Exactly.
And my dad still forgave me. Now, mind you, this is like the next day in the paper of the San Jose Mercury News. On the second page, God damn it wasn't the first.
But yeah, 92nd.
It was the second page. It says city attorney's son, Rick Doyle, or city attorney's son, Grafton Doyle, or city attorney's son, blah, 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 basically gets arrested, but fights cops. It says I fought the cops. And there's this long article about how I got into the scuffle with the police, and it was, you know, they've tased me 7 times in a minute 46 seconds, and they broke my jaw, and yada, yada. And like, and that's right after all, like that's when I, like that was the night I was in jail, or the next day I was in jail, and I became like this instant celebrity in jail. But like that's another story. But like my dad, despite all that, forgave me.
Exactly.
And that's like that power that you talk about, like of like this son that you become a lion for, like that you just, like the moment you have your child in your hands, like you just like open up in this whole
they're
way.
Your, that, they're your son forever, for life. It didn't matter if he's 5 years old, 3 months, or 40 years old. It's not like you're responsible. But what happens, you know what I mean? You always are looking up for them, you know what I mean? And I noticed, yeah, and you're right about that. There is a lot of responsibility my son, they have to take for their own. And that's where he is right now. You know, when he understood, you know what I mean, that it wasn't just my fault. And he has a lot of stuff. But, you know, I had a lot to do with what I put him through, that I didn't think I was doing it. Like, no, you're going with me. Let's go to the hotel and let's go do this. And everything was perfect. But I remember when I stopped drinking and I started saying no, oh, my God, I was the most horrible people in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She told me, you know, I prefer to see you when you're drinking. I don't like you when you're not drinking. Why? Because I started learning how to say no. I started to take care of myself. I started to do a bunch of different stuff. And what happened?
And the people don't know how to react, do they?
Exactly. No,
do they start like fucking with you more?
Oh yeah. You know? And that's the thing. You know what I mean? But that's when you have to come with, I would call it the toolbox. Whenever you start feeling like, oh, poor me. Oh, Julio, poor Julio. Oh, really? Do you want to go back to the hospital, put a tube in your arm, and then you're not going to eat for 3 months, and then you almost die? And like, oh, no, I'm not going to, you know. So
that is something that I call Julio. I call you for that.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
I know, you'll always put me in my place.
Exactly.
Like, and like, let's be honest, like, I can be kind of a bitch sometimes. Like,
kind of a bitch, okay.
I mean, I'm like there's always something I can find.
Mm-hmm.
This is real talk, right?
Exactly,
now.
Yeah, real
and
talk.
And Julio's the first one to say, like, shut the fuck up, you little bitch.
Exactly.
Sorry, I just spat on you. But and that's, you keep it real. But that's that's years of like all these working with these tools.
Exactly.
We're dealing with something like that's pretty dark here. I mean, this is a mental illness.
Yeah, no, it's mental illness. It's addiction. It's, you know, like a poor me, Julio, for not having a dad. Poor me, Julio, for I started working when I was 14. Or poor, you know, something. You always go to the poor me, where stop being a freaking victim and be a victor.
Yeah.
Stop making excuses for what your dad did or your mom did and forget about it, because there is nothing you can do by bringing it to your life. And that's what I went through. Honestly, I tell you, you know what I mean? I end up in jail too, you know what I mean? Drunk driving. I almost died 3 times, 4 times. My pancreas was out completely, and I'm alive, you know what I mean? But you have to have, you know, a lot of people go to me like, oh yeah, you know, do you believe in higher power? Of course, you know, I believe in God, you know, he saved my butt. I remember when I was 120 pounds and with the tube in my arm, they only feed you this white liquid through your arm. Mm-hmm. I couldn't eat water, drink water or eat ice, nothing. I mean, for 3 months, they kept me in the hospital for a month and a half. And basically they go like, there's nothing we can do. The swelling is not going down. You got to go back home. Like basically to die, you know what I mean? A nurse will come every 3 days to change the lines. And I remember when I couldn't eat, they will go all into the room in the back to eat but I was able to smell it all the way over there. And I remember towards the end, when I went from 198 to 120 pounds and I didn't have any, I went on my knees and I go, God, please take me. I can't take this anymore. I think, you know, it's time for me to go. And I remember feeling this warmth in my body, you know what I mean? And then I pass out. I woke up, but I knew something was different, you know what I mean? And then they do the MRI, and they go like a week later, like, oh, this swelling, because they were gonna pull it. They go like, if nothing happened the next 10 days, we have to pull everything out, and there is nothing we can do for you. And that happens, and all of a sudden, you know, oh, this swelling is going down. And I knew it was God. I knew it was a higher power. I knew I had a meeting in my life. I had to do something.
But that's like the power of God, because it's like, I don't know, when did you always believe in God, or
You know, I always believe in God, but God didn't get to, I always pray, I always believe, but I always had this thing about, oh, fuck it. You know, they were like, oh, I'm gonna drink. Oh, it's okay. And next day, like, oh, God, I'm sorry that I drink like this. Or you get stopped by the police and you're in jail for a drunk driving. Like, God, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? That kind of, you know what I mean?
But that ties back to this prodigal son story, because, like, the real message, moral of mm-hmm. that story is not necessarily that, like, oh, like, all fathers should forgive their sons. But exactly. That your father, God, mm-hmm. will always forgive
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Because there's nothing to forgive you for. I mean, he just loves you unconditionally.
Exactly.
And so that is the one thing that I've always like struggled to wrap my head around, because I was like, I always felt that shame mm-hmm. and like wherever it comes from, I punished myself and I would punish others through my behavior. Mm-hmm. And so like but there's that one relationship that we have that we can rely on
and that's the thing that I couldn't understand too, because right. I was like, why do he continue forgiving me if I keep on fucking up? So what happens, I remember when I was in the hospital the first time that I went with my, I was so swelled up, my stomach was like this high, pain, it was unbearable when they find out that I have pancreatitis from drinking too much. And I tried to turn on the TV because they give you the morphine, this thing with morphine, and I will push the button because at that point they let you do it yourself every half an hour because the pain was unbearable. And I tried to turn on the TV, and all of a sudden I turned the control falls down, the TV turns on, and there is Joel Osteen, you know, the preacher.
Yeah.
And he started talking about addiction, he started talking about divorce, he started talking about everything that was going on, and I started crying like a little baby. I mean, like crying because I knew God was using him to talk to me and telling me, look, you know, I know that you're going through everything. But what it was, I remember that day now going forward, when I fell to sleep and I got up and I felt like something was changed. That moment I felt like God was telling me, okay, you have a purpose. That's why I keep you here. You know what I mean? And I'm forgiving you. And I remember listening to this thing. I don't know if it was Joel Osteen or somebody else. And they say, the issue is when you ask God for forgiveness, he already forgave you. But the enemy, but sometimes a lot of people are going to say the enemy is the devil, or the enemy is your own self, that you keep on punishing yourself or you keep on feeling guilty where he already forgave you. And what happened when I understood that, I know I'm a human being. The only one who is perfect is God. I'm going to make mistakes, but he wants to see that we repent and we try to do better, because that's a test that we have to pass, right? But without those tests, you can become the person that you are. So what happens when I understood, God, I'm sorry I messed up.
Wow.
Then I knew he forgave me already. And then this other little voice, yeah, but you do. And I was like, no, shut up. And finally, I've been able for years to quiet the other side and trying to be nice and be good. But sometimes I make mistakes. But when I make the mistake, oh, God, that's a test, right? Okay, I'm going to pass it. I'm sorry that I fucked up. And let me go back to try to be better. But that's how God knows when he's going to elevate you to the next level. But if we don't do it, forget it. But it was funny because after everything that happened, you know, 6 months, I don't drink. That's the period that after I stopped drinking and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, that's when I go to a party, somebody invite me, like, you want a glass of wine, it's only wine. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can do it. And I get up in the hotel room the next day with 8 bottles of wine around me in the bar. So what happens, that's when the 56 beer went again. But still, you know, God had this mercy. And all of a sudden, well, in those 6 months that I didn't drink, I get a call from the doctor because they were doing the MRIs. And they go like, Julio, you need to come in. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong now? You know what I mean? I show up and we're like, well, we have bad news. He was like, these bubbles of gastric, because the pancreas produces the gastric acid, right? They form outside your pancreas and they're hanging. And they said, we have to do an operation from your sternum all the way to your penis in order to take them out. Mm. And I'm like, and then...
All right, we're back. We lost a little bit of whatever it's called. What is it called when you lose connection? And we're back we're just going to wrap it up for a minute. But I just wanted to kind of, we were talking about the power of gratitude, of being connected and surrendering towards your whatever higher power you choose. Just like the blessings of life that like follow, but also like I want to say this before we finish. There's a saying. I don't know who said this to me, but like, be careful what you pray for, and be careful for how much you ask God for help, because the moment you do and you really mean it and you really surrender, like life is going to change for you in a way that your ego will not always like.
Exactly.
But it is what you need, and it gets you to that place that like of fulfillment and I would say like happiness. I mean, what is happiness? We could go on a long discussion about that, but I find that when I have truly like surrendered to God's will for my life, mm-hmm. it never looks like what I think.
Exactly.
But it feels like the greatest that could ever feel.
Yeah, this is what people don't understand, because I always say the same thing. I remember one time I asked God, you know, I was driving a really nice car, a Mercedes-Benz S50, you know what I mean, S55, convertible hardtop and everything. I was like, God, you know, it's not about ego, but I always wanted to have a really nice car, like a Ferrari, a Maserati, and stuff. Like, I really wanted that, not because ego, because I love cars. I really love it. So, and I remember watching Miami Vice, and it's not about showing it off, but it's about just driving one, you know, before I die. I know it doesn't fit in my coffin, but I wanted to drive it, right? 2 days later,
you could get buried in one, I guess. Have a beer coffin.
But it was funny because I'm driving on 101. The whole traffic stopped, and this other car comes behind me and destroyed my car from behind. And I hit another car. I end up with a contusion in the hospital. To make the story short, you know what I mean? I'm in Vegas, and all of a sudden, you know what I mean? I see the car that I want, and now I'm driving that car, right? And it's not to show off either. But what I'm trying to say, I got a contusion, I got all this, but I asked God that I want a car, and he gave me the car, you know what I mean? So when you ask for things, God is sometimes going to give it to you quickly. The universe is going to give it to you quickly, but you have to be prepared for that. So that's why when you ask for something, be prepared for changes, because it's not going to be the change that you think is going to happen. You know what I mean?
I mean, that happened to me when I was applying to graduate school, because mm-hmm. I, first of all, was like, I'm done with school. Mm-hmm. I went to school later in life. I like finished at like 32 or mm-hmm. like in 2019, I finished my BA mm-hmm. After going back for several years. And I... it was more of like a personal thing for me, like just for my own, like mm-hmm. my own confidence. And it was a big dream of mine to finish. And mm-hmm. It was just so expected in my mm-hmm. family. And and I remember like when I was like, I applied to grad school, but I was like, you know what? I don't really need to. I just need to work and mm-hmm. I'll be fine. But I was like, I'm going to give it a chance because like, they're so competitive. I'm just going to at least see what happens.
Exactly.
And I fell in love with writing. And so I like applied to all these playwriting programs and dramatic writing programs, which like incorporate both screen and TV and playwriting. And And I remember getting, I was like, I randomly got this ping in my email and it was from NYU. And now let's be real, NYU is like one of the greatest dramatic writing programs mm-hmm. in the nation. And I was like, holy crap, like, okay. And then like a day later, Columbia University pings me for an interview. And then USC pings me for an interview. And I'm like, sitting there, I'm like, oh my God, like, how is this happening? Like, and so I do the interviews and I'm like, of course, I'm like enamored by New York because it's just like of the prestige and of just like the, I mean, everything that it comes with it. And like the excitement of all the people that have come from those programs.
Exactly.
And being New York, I've always wanted to be in New York. Yeah, like, New I've York always, is awesome. Since I was like 11, I wanted to be in New York. But we were in Cancun, remember, when we're writing, we're doing this writing workshop, we're developing the script down in Cancun with one of our other collaborators. And
yeah, we got to take his name, Jim Parag.
Jim Parag. And he's the star of Reno 911, Lone Star.
Lone Star, yeah.
Fox. The Ryan Murphy, Brad Falchuk show. Mm-hmm. We used to be on
HBO, the True Blood.
True Blood. And he's been in like
Fury.
Yeah, Fury. And all kind of was he Fast and the Furious or Suicide Squad?
He was Suicide Squad. Yeah. And he has had a part in Fast and the Furious, but it hasn't come out yet.
Oh, perfect. See, like, so he's like amazing. Mm-hmm. And he's like a huge part of our, like, just our I would say, like our spiritual family. And on top of our artistic family.
Yeah.
So we're in Cancun and I'm like waiting to hear back from these programs, right? And I remember like being kind of at odds because I was like, all of our work really comes from LA. Like Tomorrowland has been in LA. But I was like, but these like potential opportunities in New York might be happening. And like, how could I make that work? And like you said, like, we'll just let God take care of it. Like the right thing will happen.
Exactly.
And so like, I remember being in my hotel room and I remember getting on my knees and I said, please God, like, direct me in the way that you see fit. I know that I won't make the right decision for myself. I'll make it based on ego.
Exactly.
Well, then the next day I get a rejection letter from Columbia and from NYU. Well, I got waitlisted at NYU, but I, I was like, and I was a little devastated, to be honest with you, because I held them in such high regard to like the potentiality of my success. And then I got accepted into USC. And I already did USC for undergrad. So I was kind of like, to be honest with you, I was not enamored by it. I was not excited by it. I was I was bummed.
I remember you and you were like, oh, well, I don't know. And like, I go, yes, go for the flow. Yes, do it. Because you didn't know what happened. And
what had happened? What happened was I, first of all, met the most amazing cohort I could ever have met. These two women who like are inspiring to me as writers. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a little emotional talking about them just because of just like, I just love their work and I can't wait to celebrate the work and to be a part of their potential, like hope to be a part of their, you know, their artistic family for the future. And the teachers. But on top of that, like, I was able to work simultaneously with Tomorrowland and develop these scripts and these movie deals. And, you know, if I was in New York, it would have been a different story.
And remember something too, we would have done Dope Queens the play either.
We would have done Dope Queens the play. That's right.
That's another thing. If you would have left, no play, no nothing.
Yeah.
And all that led to so much. You know what I mean? Telling the story, your story.
Yeah.
And the people who came to see the play, all these critics, the comments were so great. You know what I mean? From Broadway.
Broadway World, and like Rage Magazine or what was it, or I forget the name, but like there was a few different, like, we had one terrible review that fucking shook me. And that was another test. It was like these, like, and these are the moments, it's like nothing is ever perfect, right?
Exactly.
I mean, like, everyone, there's always someone that's going to like,
but something like that happened. Remember I told you, okay, this one is just a test, you have to pass it, like that.
Yeah,
because I remember when you get reviews, the first one is going to be terrible always, because God or the universe is waiting to see, okay, let me see how you're going to react.
Yeah.
And if you react, and then when we talk about it, you're like, all of a sudden, all these reviews, everything is perfect. And that's what happens, because you have to pass those tests in life. You know what I mean? But honestly, I'm so grateful, because look at the film that we're filming right now.
No, it's amazing.
It came from USC Connection.
It came from USC, yeah.
So you
because we went to Sundance.
It's Sundance, yeah.
And that would not have happened if I was in New York. I would not have flown to Sundance. We drove from LA to Utah.
Exactly.
Park City. And it was like a last minute thing. Mm-hmm. And John and I, mm-hmm. we went to some random parties and like went to the USC one, mm-hmm. and that's where we met Halia, mm-hmm. Who introduced us to Sienna and her whole team, mm-hmm. and that's how we got started with this group. And that's the blessing and the miracle of life. To me, it's like there's always a plan, or there's some type of construction happening that like is exactly. that is being figured out as we go along. But we're not the boss of it. Mm-hmm. I'm not in control of it. And then when I give up that control, it's amazing what happens.
And that's exactly what I always tell people. You know, I mean, I remember my time when I was drinking. I was making a lot of money. I remember going at New Year's, you know, where are we going to go as a family? I'm like, oh, we're going to Puerto Vallarta. But the hotels are like $600-$700 a night. I don't care. Oh, get it, get it. Then we get there and I wanted to be in the balcony. And I go like, you know, that's my ego when I was drinking. I go like, I want that table over there. That one's already taken. How much did they pay? Oh, I paid double. Give me.
Oh my God. Me too. I mean, like, yeah.
It's so disgusting. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting there. After a few drinks, I get so messed up and I don't remember anything. And I spend all that money. My point is, you know, when we're driven by ego and by stupidity, you know what I mean? I call it stupidity because it's so stupid that sometimes, let's be honest right now. We stay in a top-notch hotel and we got such a great deal because a phone call and a phone call and a phone call. Then we're flying back and forth, you know what I mean? Paying almost nothing, you know what I mean? So my point is that sometimes you can get first class if you just humble.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what people don't understand. First class is yesterday I learned something really cool. And it says, don't worry about your dreams and goals. Because what is yours, nobody can take it away. And if you are fighting with people, oh, because of him, I didn't get this deal. Oh, because of her, I didn't do this. They had nothing to do that. That was just a lesson for you to see if you were going to pass the test. Mm-hmm. But what is yours, what you have in your heart, what you know that you want, what you know that you're going to work hard for, nobody can take that away. You know what I mean? So the worrying has to go away. And that's one thing that I go like, yeah, I don't have to worry about anything. You know what I mean? Because I know that I'm going to continue doing the right thing. I'm going to try to continue being honest. Remember, one thing that I always say, live by example. If you want people to do a good, you have to do good. If you want people to work hard, you have to work hard. Because if people go like, oh, I'm the boss. No, shut up. You're supposed to be a leader.
Yeah.
And you have to work, you know, together to get there. But that's what it is. You know, life is so simple. We make it so freaking difficult. You know what I mean? And I think, I think that we have so many more stories that we can tell.
Well, this definitely is going to be tabled. Has to be tabled for another session because mm-hmm. I think we've realized how much there's to share and discuss, and mm-hmm. We definitely have to do a second episode at a later date. But I will say, thank you so much, Julio.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate mm-hmm. your candor, your authenticity, and that's I knew that was going to happen because that's who you are.
Thank you.
And really, just really blessed, and I thank you to all the viewers or listeners. This is the Seven Lives podcast because we've almost run out of nine.
Exactly.
But we're here still. So please tune in to our next session when I publish it. Thank you. You want to say any last words?
Just remember something, okay? Be grateful. Be humble. Help people. And shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.